Stay tuned for Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, a fun, informative talk show putting a spotlight on sustainability from around the globe. Mrs. Green doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies. The Fairfax Companies are dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices. Fairfax is the leader in the business of sustainability. As a leader in the construction waste industry, they demonstrate that it's possible to implement sustainable business practices profitably. Fairfax's mission is to find or create markets for all waste disposal in construction and demolition landfills. They screen and sort all construction and demolition waste that passes through their gates. By sorting these materials, they make sure that as much recyclable material as possible is diverted from the landfill and nothing goes into the landfill that may be harmful to the environment. Visit their website at www.thefairfaxcompanies.com for more information. Now, stay tuned for Mrs. Green's World.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mrs. Green's World. We are live on this first Saturday in August, and I am so excited to be here sharing a lot of great information with you. We are really going to have a wonderful show. Mike Baruch from TEP is calling to talk about remodeling and the great programs that they have at TEP, as always. And we always love having TEP on and what they have to say. He'll be talking about the Bright Save program. And our guest today for the feature after Mike is finished is Chef Ann Cooper, known as the Renegade Lunch Lady. And I don't even know how to do her justice. She is taking school lunch programs on by storm. And as you know, if you are a listener to Mrs. Green or follow anything I write about, tweet about, or Facebook about, we have a really seriously compromised food supply chain, if you ask me. And I love to hear about people like Chef Ann Cooper, who is really doing something about it with a bunch of great people from around the country. I was shocked when I dug a little bit deeper on the research. So for the next minute or so, I just want to talk to you about, to me, the first and most important R in reduce, reuse, recycle. It's really only the first R. But I just got back from 2 weeks in Argentina, and the province of Argentina has 13 million people. So it kind of brought things to another level to me when you have that many people living in one area, how important reduce is. And no matter where you are on the planet, no matter where you are listening to Mrs. Green, just remember, here's a couple of quick tips for the big R's. You know what I'm going to say first, and I have to laugh at myself. Reduce your use of plastic bags. It's become a joke in my family and with friends because we have so many people that are laughing when we're driving in the car or walking down the street, and we see plastic bags that fly in the car. They've actually flown on the windshield. They fly in front of me. There are pictures on my Facebook of plastic bags in Argentina. Not that they look any differently there. But you have to really start thinking about eliminating your use of plastic bags. How hard can this be? We have plastic bags everywhere. We don't need to have them anywhere. I met a woman from Ireland who said they reduced their consumption, which I knew, by 95%. But they did put a 15 cent per bag tariff on them. So if I see you and you have a plastic bag, I might actually come up and say, really, dude, you don't need to do that. So just count them out next time you're outside going around and seeing what they do.
It may be the only desert oasis in the world, complete with botanical gardens, nature trails, eclectic shops, and art galleries, and a new summer menu. And it's right near you, Tohono O'Toole Park. Come enjoy Chef Albert Hall's new summer menu additions. Then enjoy a stroll through our shops, art galleries, and botanical gardens. Park admission is 2-for-1 with purchase in our charming tea room. Nurture yourself, nature yourself. Tohono O'Toole Park. For more information, go to TohonoO'toolePark.org.
Hi, I'm Terry D. from Habitat for Humanity Tucson's Habistar. Come see us out at our new location at 935 West Grant Road. That's Grant Road in I-10. If you're looking for anything to do with your home, whether it's appliances, cabinets, doors or windows, even paint supplies, come out to 935 West Grant Road. Our donation hotline number, 520-889-7200. If you've been doing your spring cleaning, you need us to come out and pick up some of your stuff, call us up at our hotline. Hotline, 520-889-7200, and come in and shop and support Habitat for Humanity Tucson.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Isn't that a great concept? And sorry for the glitch earlier. You know, we have the Mr. and Mrs. Green team here getting things ready to rock. We have a home studio. We're broadcasting with just some wonderful opportunities to go global. And we have glitches. And the best thing in the world to do is say, okay, we had a glitch and I talk too much. What else is new? So we still have a great show planned for you today. And thanks for your patience. A very quick green tip. Remember that the first R is reduced, and you can find out a lot more about by visiting my website, mrsgreensworld.com. I wrote my entire newsletter about it last week, so enough about that. We are going to now go to Mike Baruch with a hot topic for the day for everybody, given our situation in our country. Remodeling is really what's happening, and TEP is stepping up to the plate to do their part to help. So, Mike, welcome to Mrs. Green's World.
Thank you so much, and it's so exciting to be here in your new studio.
It is exciting, isn't it?
It's great. It is. Congratulations on that.
You have to come in someday when you're going to do a segment and just sit with us.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to do that, and also to tell you a little bit more about the Bright Safe Home program. It is a fantastic new program TEP has launched for anybody out there that is either considering replacing their air conditioner or maybe doing a little remodeling work. The Bright Safe Home program actually takes the building science that we've brought to the community for years through the Guarantee Home program and helps take some of that science from our new homes and bring it to your existing home. So this summer, when you're thinking about potentially replacing that air conditioner, I encourage you to look at TEP / green for the Bright Safe Home program. There's a list of Bright Safe Home contractors there. And all of those contractors have gone through a BPI training, which is Building Performance Institute, and learned about whole house science. So whether you're just having insulation added or you're having air conditioning replaced, they can talk to you about the whole house building science and refer you to our home energy experts at TEP who can come out to your home and do an energy audit or energy analysis. And what that is it's a 2 to 3 hour top-to-bottom review of your home where we measure the area, the volume of the house, look at your windows and doors and openings and which direction they face and whether they receive shading or not. And then we also look at all of your equipment that you have, your air conditioner, your furnace, your water heater, ranges, other appliances that consume electricity, and do an analysis of the energy usage of your house and where there are opportunities for improvement. And at the end of the analysis, we give you a list of improvements that we recommend and how much energy you might expect to save from doing those improvements.
And
so
it's
a great way to either start or finish a home project.
I mean, to me, it's really a great way to start. And I have to, of course, put in my 2 cents because we did have one. And I think in order to just, I mean, I am John Q. Public, so I have to say that it was painless. It's not like you have to study for the test or there's a pass or a fail. the person that I had come to our house was so wonderful and easy to work with. And, you know, my husband was involved. It's just they go and you don't have to sit there for 2 or 3 hours. You really come in and do the work. And there's another component that you mentioned that I really don't want to gloss over. It really matters to me as a consumer that TEP actually, when you talked about the BPI, they're all certified. I think you should tell people a little bit more about what that means and that you have a trusted person that's going to help do the repair work once you find out what TEP, that what the audit has to say. So why don't you explain a little bit more about that, because it was painless and I highly encourage it.
Yes. And thank you so much for the good reference there. We enjoy going out and doing your home. And, you know, our team collectively has over 100 years of experience in building science. And working with BPI is really exciting. So BPI is the Building Performance Institute. You can look at that up at bpi.org. It's a nonprofit that's been around for decades, setting national standards in home retrofit improvement and training, and they provide an accreditation system. And it's a rigorous week-long training class that you take. There is both a two-hour-long written exam, plus there is a rigorous field exam. And it's so important to understand what that brings to the table. You know, traditionally, there are many different aspects of home improvement you can do. You can have your air conditioner replaced. You can have water heater replaced. You can have insulation added. You could do caulking projects. But each one of those trades has its own regulations and standards for how they install their products. But BPI training is about enhancing the training that those trades receive to consider the whole house as a system. And one of my favorite examples is the clothing dryer. You know, most of us have clothing dryers in our home. Some of them are outside, but in most new homes, the clothing dryers are inside.
Right.
And they exhaust, 150 to 200 cubic feet per minute of air. So they heat that air up, and they spit it out through a dryer vent. And we all know that part, but how many of us think about where is that air actually coming from? It's actually coming from a grill in the back of your dryer, so it's sucking that air out of your laundry room. When you start to conceive of the volume of 150, 200 cubic feet per minute, that's an awful lot of air. So, you know, in order for that volume of air to get sucked out of your home, new air must be coming in from somewhere.
Right.
Otherwise, the house would collapse, you know, like deflating a balloon.
Right.
But that doesn't happen. So we know there are a lot of leaks in most homes, but we don't know where to find them. And our team goes in there, and we conduct what's called a blower door test. And it's a similar type operation where there's actually a fan that exhausts air out of the house, but we have a computer attached to the fan, and we're able to measure the air pressure, the speed of the fan, and do some calibrations and comparisons to opening up certain things and closing them and really figure out where air leakage is in the home. In a lot of homes, there's an awful lot of duct leakage that people don't see because it's up in their attics.
And not only do they not see it, they don't think about it. You can be sure that I don't walk around my house thinking about, are any of my ducts leaking? But when the audit came, I did. And, you know, the air test, the air blower test, it reminded me of a scene from E.T. I mean, literally, they close off your door, and it's like, I'm that old. I remember the E.T., and it was very fascinating, intriguing to me. And another point that you made that I don't want to gloss over, and I've certainly learned this on my Mrs. Green journey, it's not about the air conditioner or the dryer or the refrigerator or turning off your lights or your ductwork. It's about everything. And you talked about an integrated system, and it's really putting that my head around that makes sense for what we're trying to doing in our own home to save money and energy, because I think you can't underscore that enough in these challenging economic times. This is about saving money, guys. I mean, seriously. So, Mike, you're not going to believe this, but we're almost out of time for your segment. I knew this was going to happen.
Goodness.
I know. So tell people again how they get in touch with you, how they find out about this great program.
Okay. It's the Bright Save Home program. You can look it up online at tep.com/green, or you can call 888 870-0050.
Okay, Mike, thanks. Have a great Saturday. And they can always find out about this by info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'll be right back with Chef Ann Cooper, the Renegade Lunch Lady, Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Stay here with me. This is Mrs. Green from Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Did you know that the TDI clean diesel engine in my Jetta from Chapman Tucson gets 30 miles per gallon in the city and 42 on the highway? It has more power, uses less fuel, and I call it the fuel-efficient powerhouse. The 2-liter four-cylinder engine in my Jetta produces 90% less sooty emissions. For the best ownership experience possible, please visit Chapman at 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
Bugs like plants. It's just a fact of farming. But the U of A is helping farmers apply the latest research to stop pests without toxic chemicals. Turns out something as basic as working with other growers on where to place crops each year can block bug migrations, saving millions. Healthier food and a healthier bottom line? We call that a win-win. Naturally, the University of Arizona, a sustainable partner in Arizona's future.
Hi, Mrs. Green here. Did you know you can reduce your water and fertilizer use in your yards and gardens by using Back2Feed? The Back2Feed system is economical, easy to use, and extremely effective. Back2Feed introduces billions of microbes into your soil using water. You simply add water to the powder, let it sit for 24 hours, and apply with a yard feeder. It is used on farms and golf courses all over the Southwest. Give your soil organisms with Back2Feed. Visit Back2Feed.com.
Fairfax Companies is Tucson's green waste disposal solution. Contractors, landscapers, or do-it-yourselfers, come see us. We recycle almost all types of construction and landscape waste. Eastside Speedway and Prudence, Northwest I-9-I-10, Southeast Drexel and Houghton. The Fairfax Companies is the leader in the business of sustainability. We're open to the public and cost less than other landfills. Call 290-9313. 290-9313 or visit us online at thefairfaxcompanies.com.
Hi, Kathy Rankin here with Temco Air in Tucson, and I'm a huge fan of Mrs. Green. In the scheme of going green, I'm still just a little sprout, but thanks to Mrs. Green, I've learned a lot of easy and fun ways to help the environment. Okay, so I'm not willing to install chemical toilets in my house, but reusable shopping bags, I'm in. Reduce, recycle, reuse, I get it. So get your green on the easy and fun way with Mrs. Green. Did I mention fun? Check out her website at mrsgreensworld.com and tell Gina Kathy sent you.
My name is Mary Cochran, and I'm a pediatrician here in Southern Arizona. I'd like to tell you about an amazing leadership program for your daughters. I'm talking about Girl Scouts. Girl Scouts is everything you could wish for your daughters and more. Girls learn important life skills, explore the environment, take action in the community through service projects, and make lasting friendships, all while developing essential leadership skills. I encourage you to visit GirlScoutsSouthernArizona.org to find the perfect fit for your daughter.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. We love that concept. A wonderful, wonderful guest today. We already had Mike Baruch from TEP, and they're doing great things for the environment. And today we have the privilege of interviewing Chef Ann Cooper, who is not just a chef. She's a celebrated author, chef, educator, and this is one of my favorite phrases that I picked up from her bio, an enduring advocate for better food for all children. Ann, welcome to Mrs. Green's World. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show today. And there's so much to share. I just want to make it all about you.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
You know, I just, this is one of those times where I really do prepare for the shows and I do a lot of research. And I looked at for hours and hours over the past couple of weeks about some of the things you've done. So getting that into 15-minute sound bites is a challenge. But I think a great place to start is how did you transition from chef to changing the way that school kids are fed? And there's one little important piece of information. I'm a big believer in the compromise food chain. One of the other lines that I found is, in a nation where children are born with shorter estimated life expectancies than their parents because of diet-related illnesses. I mean, with all that we know, with all the information that's out there, it wasn't shocking to me, but it was sad. So how did your journey begin to really take the country on in terms of what we're feeding our kids in schools?
You know, I'm such an unlikely candidate to be an advocate for kids. I was a semi-celebrity chef for most of my career, white tablecloth, cooked in restaurants all over this country and internationally as well. And I never knew what kids ate. I didn't want to feed them. You know, my worst fear was Saturday night, somebody comes running in the kitchen, chef, there's a screaming kid on table 19, what should we do? And my response was, ask them to leave. What are they doing in here with their kids on a Saturday night?
We're having all this good food.
Yeah, why is it bothering me? But as the years progressed in the late 90s, I really started getting into the whole sustainable food, local food movement, and I wrote my second book of four, Bitter Harvest. And in Bitter Harvest, I really started to think about and understand why and how food makes us sick and makes our kids sick, and I really just started thinking about it. And in 1999, I got asked to become the executive chef of a school in New York, and that was the beginning.
So the journey began with a single step, but not really. It was really a process. So when you talk about your philosophy and belief in the, you know, the connection, I have a whole bunch of questions about A Bitter Harvest, but you talk about food, family, and farming. And one of my guests a couple of weeks ago was Lori David, who wrote The Family Dinner. And again, she was talking about the importance of healthy food and just the importance of having dinner as a family. So what about the habits that in the very beginning, everybody that's listening, myself included, have to start thinking about changing? Because just as Mike said from TEP, our home is a system. Our food supply is a system. It's not just, you know, the food we put in our mouth. It comes from somewhere. It's shipped from somewhere or not. And it impacts the family. And I don't want to be melodramatic, but our lives depend on it. So where do we start with our beliefs and our core values in taking some baby steps towards moving to more sustainable lifestyles?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, as my friend Joel Salatin says, we have to find our kitchens again. If we want a sustainable food supply, we have to cook. We have to have real food. You know, that's the first step, cooking.
And we can't gloss over that. Right, right.
Yeah, and then cooking and teaching our kids to cook. I mean, it's really the beginning of having a sustainable food supply.
And we talked about on this other show that, you know, you don't say, okay, I'm going to stop global warming. You start with, I'm going to feed my kids and my family healthy food. And it really is one of those what I call going upstream kind of concepts. What about how heavily do you advocate for, I know that you want to talk a little bit about, or I hope you do, the regional concept, because, you know, there are some ridiculous stories where, you know, in the past, food went from this huge growing tomato farm outside of Tucson, everything shipped to L.A., and then to get those tomatoes, you'd have to come back. They were shipped back to Tucson, so they traveled thousands of miles before they got on our grocery store shelves. So how much do you advocate and say we've got to start thinking in a more organic, non-pesticide mindset? I mean, it's really a challenge.
Well, I think you're talking about two different things. I mean, I think, so the two things I just heard you say is, what do I think about, you know, food produced without chemicals? And the other thing is, what do I think about a more regionalized food system? So the more regionalized food system, I think, is super, super important. But I think we have to think of our regions as concentric circles that grow and contract. I mean, I'm here in Colorado, and this time of year, I went to the farmer's market this morning, and I can get absolutely anything at the farmer's market. I mean, it was just unbelievable. all the beautiful food at the farmer's market. But come November, you know, December, January,
right.
there's no more beautiful food in Colorado farmer's market.
Right, right.
So what do we do, you know? So if the circle is really small this time of year, how small can you keep it? Can you say, I'm not going to bring in anything from another country? Well, does that mean you're never going to eat chocolate and coffee or tea, you know?
Right, right.
But do you try and buy those things sustainably grown and produced and fair trade when you do? And, you know, in Colorado, do we decide to buy Arizona or Texas citrus in the winter instead of California? Because it's closer. They're neighboring states. So I think you just need to think of it in that way, and I certainly believe we need to have a more regionalized food system. As far as organic, I mean, we need to stop killing our kids with food. We in this country right now, 70% of all antibiotics are consumed in animal husbandry. So that means 70% of the antibiotics we consume comes from, you know, the meat and, you know, meat and in some cases fish supplies. You know, it's no wonder we have that latest strain of salmonella that came out, and the turkey is antibiotic resistant. I mean, that just happened, you know, this past week. So we really have to think about that. And the food supply that's full of high fructose corn syrup and trans fats and dyes, and, you know, now kids, you know, we're seeing puberty start at, you know, 10 because of the estrogens and the food supply and in the environment. I mean, we're just really killing ourselves and our kids with this unsustainable food supply. So I do think it's really important.
And I love that you're bold enough to say that, because I really do believe that people are dying. I mean, we have friends, and it's very easy to read about it with Google, the rates of autism, young people being diagnosed with things like fibromyalgia. I mean, I never heard of that disease 40 years ago. Younger and younger and younger people, and pancreatic cancer. So I know we are killing ourselves, and I like to say I have a fun and informative talk show, but when it comes to the food supply, I am rabid. I mean, we have made the most drastic changes in our family about the food we eat because of what I know in the books that I've read. I mean, it doesn't have to be scary. It can just be information that helps you change some habits and make some better choices. Now, let's talk a little bit, and there's going to be a break soon, so we will have to break this up. But so this morphed into the trend for the more regional, local purchasing and consuming. You've started with a group of people something amazing to me called the Lunchbox Project, because where we can get massive amounts of kids is in school for at least one, and in some cases, two meals a day. So how did you go from, I'm skipping around a little bit, but how did you go from the chef? And I noticed how you glossed over some of the places that you've worked, and they really are amazing. And the you know, the places that you've been interviewed and where you have been a chef is most impressive. But how did you morph into, okay, I'm frustrated, I see all the challenges, let's get into something, and we're going to have a lunchbox project?
Well, after I started working in school food in 1999, so it's 12 years ago, going on 13 years ago. And after I'd been doing it a while, first in New York and then in Berkeley in California, I started to think that we needed to, I couldn't, you know, change this one school at a time, but schools did want to change, and advocates that wanted to help them really needed tools. So with the help of the Kellogg Foundation, Orfler Foundation, Colorado Health Foundation, Children's Health Foundation, we built the initial lunchbox, and then Whole Foods came on as a partner, and they really allowed us to start building it out. And that website is www.thelunchbox.org, and it's healthy tools for healthy schools. I mean, there's so many things, recipes and menus and financial modeling tools and videos and training tools. It's really great. And so we really realized if we were going to change how we're feeding our children all across the country in schools and, you know, every community, then we really needed to help schools by giving them the tools to make those changes.
And I would call it a user-friendly, how it works, tutorials. I mean, it's a very easy to navigate website, which I think is great. But so you have the concept for the Lunchbox Project. You get some sponsors. And what was the big plan for outreach? Because how do people know that you have this wonderful opportunity of the Lunchbox Project?
Well, we, you know, we are using all kinds of social media, of course. We're on Facebook and Twitter and
right.
LinkedIn. And I do a lot of speaking all over the country. And we work with our partners and all the foundations and our community partners as well to help get the word out there. I spoke at the School Nutrition Association conference this past year. So we're doing everything we can to make sure that people know that these tools are available.
And it's certainly one of those things where the social media helps. We are going to take a short break. We are talking to Chef Ann Cooper, who is a chef extraordinaire and is a celebrated author, chef, educator. We will be right back. Stay here with me.
I'm Karen, owner of Nurturing Nature, an eco-boutique that offers earth-friendly goods, gifts, and apparel items for all ages, from babies to grandparents. Our ethically produced products are unique and stylish. Mention that Mrs. Green sent you and receive 10% off purchases that are good for the world and good for those who mean the world to you. So join others who are finding the simple beauty that lies in nurturing nature, located in the Williams Center at Broadway and Craycroft. Call us at 520-790-5910. That's 520-790-5910.
Other grocery stores don't tell you their produce is first shipped to an out-of-state distributor before hitting the shelves. At the Food Conspiracy Co-op, we cultivate relationships with Southern Arizona farmers who deliver their fresh-picked fruits and vegetables to our door, ensuring freshness and a low carbon footprint. Anyone can shop at the Food Conspiracy Co-op, which is collectively owned by nearly 2,000 Tucsonans. The co-op is open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily on 4th Avenue between 6th and 7th Streets. Come check us out.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Mrs. Green here for Back to Feed. Are your carrots the size of Q-tips? Are your string beans all strung out? Have the petals fallen off the rose? Does your lawn yawn? Sounds like you could use some organisms. 100% natural Back to Feed provides billions of organisms that improve the organic composition of your soil. And it gets even better. You'll even use less water and fertilizer. Give your lawn and garden what it needs. Back to Feed. Find us at backtofeed.com.
I'm Holly with Garment Graphics and Promotional Products. We're excited that Garment Graphics prints apparel with water-based ink, so it's earth-friendly and has a super soft feel. Most t-shirts now, including organic cotton, are lighter weight fabric, and the feel of the water-based ink is something that people really like and want to wear. A big part of successful promotions is having your item or message stick around. Call us at 520-544-0529 or check us out at garmentgraphics.net.
Hi, Kathy Rankin here with Temco Air in Tucson, and I'm a huge fan of Mrs. Green. In the scheme of going green, I'm still just a little sprout, but thanks to Mrs. Green, I've learned a lot of easy and fun ways to help the environment. Okay, so I'm not willing to install chemical toilets in my house, but reusable shopping bags, I'm in. Reduce, recycle, reuse, I get it. So get your green on the easy and fun way with Mrs. Green. Did I mention fun? Check out her website at MrsGreensWorld.com and tell Gina Kathy sent you.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we are getting informed, we are having fun, we are learning, and this show is about not telling you what to think, just asking you to. We love that concept, and we thank you for tuning in. Our guest today, our featured guest, is Chef Ann Cooper, who truly is a celebrated author of four books, I might add, chef, educator, and enduring advocate for better food for all of our children. And we're thrilled to have her. We're learning some great information about initiatives that have gone across the country that are growing. And we were talking about the Lunchbox Project. And thank you for taking the time to be on our show today. And let's talk a little bit more about, I always like to mention the websites as much as I can because people tune in and out, or they might have tuned in, and we want people to know how to get a hold of of the projects and the information that's available for people that want to pursue it?
Well, the two websites that I'd like everyone to remember is thelunchbox.org, and which is Healthy Tools for All Schools, www.thelunchbox.org. And our latest project is the Salad Bar Project. That website is www.saladbars2schools.org. And our foundation with our partners has already raised over $2 million and helped put almost 800 salad bars in schools across the country.
I love it. I love it. I mean, it made my eyebrows go up, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So a couple of just down and dirty questions. How are the kids liking it? Like, my kids are healthier eaters than I am by a long shot, which makes me proud as a mother to say that. How are the kids embracing it? Are they ready for better, healthy food, or is there resistance, mixed reviews? How's that working?
You know, I like to say it's a 20-20-60 paradigm, and I think this is whether you're dealing with kids, the community, my employees.
Right.
I mean, I think that there's usually 20% of any group that's going to support a new thing.
The early adopters, right.
The early adopters, and they're going to support it because it's something they actually believe in, and that's what they want to do. There's 20%, they're never going to support it. They're never going to like it. They're never going to support it. They just want nothing to do with it. And they're going to hate it, and they're going to be happy hating it. And then there's the 60% in the middle. And those are the 60% that you work with and you teach and you know, you help and you advocate with. And I think that we're doing really well with that group. I mean, you know, I think that there's lots of kids who like the food, and there's, you know, kids that don't like the food, but more and more kids are eating the food and being happy with it.
I think it's really interesting phenomenon because, on a personal note, my mother cooked, and she was one of the best cooks in the world, and she did cook fresh things, and we ate what was fresh. I have, you know, brothers and sisters. I'm the pickiest eater, and I, up until recently, would say I was a bottom feeder on the food chain of life. I loved junk food. I have totally shifted that. I am, you know, I didn't have Diet Coke when I was away, which is to me poison. But my children are so aware. My three daughters are so much more conscious and aware. And they're part probably of that 20%. But, you know, one daughter has children and they're healthier eaters. So I believe that you're looking for tribal members, people to migrate into the tribe and come along. And I think people want to be healthier. Your information about our lifespan from diet-related illnesses, it's everywhere. Juvenile diabetes and all of, you know, on and on and on. Okay, so let's talk about The Bitter Harvest. I think one of the first books I read in The Awakening of Mrs. Green was The Seeds of Deception, about genetically modified foods. And what talk about what the message that you got and the epiphany you had in writing the book, The Bitter Harvest.
You know, I started writing Bitter Harvest because I really started thinking about the food supply and why it makes us sick and why it makes our kids sick. And I just, you know, I was confounded by the thought and the fact that food supplies were owned, that people could own things. And I started researching it more and more, and eventually I wrote the book. And I think, you know, it was a long time ago now. It was in the late 90s. So, you know, we're talking about a book that came out, you know, like 10 years ago. I think it came out in maybe 2000. But even back then, I mean, it was clear that, you know, GMOs were bad, that we needed to get rid of high fructose corn syrup and trans fats, that we needed to eat less meat, that we needed to get antibiotics out of the food system. I mean, it was clear even back then. And, you know, since then, it's sort of become mainstream. You've got Michael Pollan and Marion Nestlin.
Right.
So many people in movies and, you know, Food, Inc. And so everybody's talking about these things. But it's so important. I mean, we can't get glazed over. We are literally killing ourselves and the planet because of our unsustainable food supply.
And I think I don't know if you were listening when I said I spent 2 weeks in Buenos Aires. And the one thing you get to do when you're on vacation, literally, is think. And I did a lot of observing, and I was doing it through a whole different, you know, set of eyes, because in my 3.5 years as Mrs. Green, I've certainly learned a lot. And I just came up with this thing that it's like we're drinking the Kool-Aid. And when you talk about raising our awareness, I mean, small steps that people can make that are affordable in their homes, and making choices and giving up a latte or two, things like organic milk. I mean, that was one of the first changes that we made. And mothers advocating for that is what made it more readily available in places like Safeway. So that was part of the change from the hormones. Now, when you talk about antibiotics, do you say 70% of the antibiotics are from the food supply that we eat, that get in our bodies?
So 70% of all the antibiotics consumed in this country consumed in animal husbandry, most in the beef industry. So beef are giving, antibiotics, not necessarily because they're sick, but because somebody figured out that they would gain weight faster with low doses of antibiotics. And then because we feed them in feedlots and they basically shit all over each other, then, you know, they needed it because of foodborne illness. But it's just absolutely crazy.
And it's obscene. I mean, if you watch some of those movies, it's a horror story. So the last movie I watched, we went to the farmer's market and we stocked up, believe me, from the local growers. And it is sometimes a budget balancing issue, but you're right. Your life depends on it. And you know, the medical care, I can't even imagine what the numbers are, staggering in terms of that. What are you about? Do you write anything? Do you know about? Do you ever talk about yeast? It's become one of my greatest obsessions. I was listening to another radio talk show, and this guy, Mike Adams, was on the Health Ranger. And he said something like he believes 80% of us, of human beings, are walking around with a yeast imbalance in our bodies that manifests itself in all kinds of health-related problems, like nagging coughs and things like that. In your research, did you come across any, did yeast come up as a red flag?
It really didn't. I haven't researched that at all, but, you know, certainly interesting. But, no, I don't really know too much about yeast.
Well, it's related to overuse of antibiotics. That's why I thought, you know, it might be interesting. So what about the spreading of the word of, let's talk about the Salad Bars to Schools project, because to me, the growth of that is phenomenal. No matter how you look at it, you have a goal of $15 million to raise. It's just about a year old. You've already raised $2 million. One of the things I loved about the website is you could actually go and see what schools are participating in your state or your city, and you can actually donate directly to that program. So how are the programs funded? Does that come then through a grant process, or is it a pass-through to the schools? How does it work to support this financially?
So we started the precursor to Let's Move Salad Bars to Schools was a project called the Great American Salad Bar Project, and it was a collaboration between Whole Foods Markets and the Food Family Farming Foundation, my foundation. And we started this to be able to do direct services and put salad bars in schools all across the country. And last fall, this time last year, we raised $1.4 million to be able to do that. And it became very high profile, and we ended up working with Michelle Obama's Let's Move project collaboratively, and ended up with some other partners as well, including United Fresh Foundation and the National Fruit and Veggie Alliance. So the four main partners now that also include our foundation and Whole Foods are actively raising money to put salad bars in schools. But we also ask schools to help raise money as well. So we have individual funders, we have grantors, and we have individual people all who think putting salad bars in schools would be really wonderful. So we get our money from all different sources.
And I'm curious as to the research on this. Have you researched about, you know, you obviously have target markets being schools, but is it teachers who are reaching out? Is it parents that are reaching out? I highly doubt that it's students. I mean, what's the breakdown there in terms of your target market and your demographic?
It's mostly parents and school advocates, but
right.
There are certainly students, especially high school students, that reach out. And then, of course, there's also all the new school nutrition association directors and things like that.
Okay, so it's really, what surprised me about Tucson High Magnet School is TUSD, our unified school district, is huge. it's really huge. And I saw a lot of charter schools are participating, but when I saw Tucson High Magnet School, it gave me a lot of joy. And it's always good to hear who's doing it and that the kids are doing it also. So again, we're going to go to a quick break because time does fly. Tell the website again for Salad Bars Two Schools. It's the number two. SaladBars2Schools.org is how people can find about getting salad bars in school in their schools. Yes?
Absolutely. That's correct.
Okay, so if you just tuned in, we're interviewing Chef Ann Cooper, who is an author, a celebrated educator, author, chef, you name it. This is a woman that we want to learn from, so stay here with me. We'll be right back. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network.
Companies is Tucson's green waste disposal solution. Contractors, landscapers, or do-it-yourselfers, come see us. We recycle almost all types of construction and landscape waste. Eastside Speedway and Prudence, Northwest I-10, Southeast Drexel and Houghton. The Fairfax Companies is the leader in the business of sustainability. We're open to the public and cost less than other landfills. Call 290-9313 or visit us online at thefairfaxcompanies.com.
You don't buy plastic bottled water. Great. You're using a reusable water bottle. Great. You're drinking lukewarm water. Not so great. Get a Swell double insulated stainless steel water bottle and your cold drinks will stay cold for 24 hours, hot for 12. With Swell, you don't have to give up cold or hot drinks just because you care about the environment. Just go to swellbottle.com to order yours. They come in 7 elegant colors and part of the proceeds go to WaterAid. Enter code Mrs. Green at checkout and receive a 10% discount.
What will it take to make solar power really take hold? A good way to store it? Check. A good way to move it? Check. A cheap way to make it? Check. Back soon. Because U of A scientists are shining their optics expertise on a new class of super mirrors that focus light onto solar cells at unprecedented intensity. Stronger light, fewer cells, lower cost. We like that equation. The University of Arizona, a sustainable partner in Arizona's future.
This is Mrs. Green from Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Did you know that the TDI clean diesel engine in my Jetta from Chapman Tucson gets 30 miles per gallon in the city and 42 on the highway? It has more power, uses less fuel, and I call it the fuel-efficient powerhouse. The 2-liter four-cylinder engine in my Jetta produces 90% less sooty emissions. For the best ownership experience possible, please visit Chapman at 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
Hi, this is Hank Kreisick, a local certified green architect and listener to Mrs. Green's World. My family and I have chosen to live and practice a more sustainable lifestyle, from my biodiesel-powered truck to our gardens and energy efficiency home retrofits. I'm excited that there's a show like Mrs. Green's World to spread the word about what is going on in the world of sustainability. Truly, choices we make today will have lasting effects on future generations, and Mrs. Green's World does make going green more fun.
Girl Scouts offers once-in-a-lifetime opportunities and experiences for all girls. By becoming a member yourself, for only $12, you are helping to make this possible. As a member, you don't have to be a troop leader or even have a daughter in Girl Scouts. Being a member means that you want to support girls in Southern Arizona and inspire them to have courage, confidence, and character. To unleash a girl's potential and support the Girl Scout movement, visit the community tab at GirlScoutsSOAZ.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And Ann Cooper, Chef Ann Cooper, is getting us to think about our lives depending upon the food supply, the food we're eating. And it's, I would say, critical. We're at a critical point in the evolution of the planet, and we're literally killing ourselves by the food we eat. And if there's anything that I believe and want to shout out on my international radio show, it's just that people wake up, be careful before you take that next bite of food. So, Ann, thanks again for being on the show. In case people just tuned in, your website that will link anybody to, you know, link people to everything is foodfamilyfarming.org. And they can also go to saladbars2schools.org and the lunchboxproject.org. Correct? Did I get all those right?
Actually, just thelunchbox.org.
Thelunchbox.org.
If you can remember one, it's thelunchbox.org. It'll get you to all the others.
To all the others. Okay, and it's a great, fun, informative website. I mean, it really is. So this is, we're not going to get really personal, but I would love to know things like, how did you get the moniker of the Renegade Lunch Lady?
You know, it was really...
It
was many years ago. I think it was over a decade ago, and when I first sort of dropped out of the White Tablecloth Liberty chef world, and I started calling myself a lunch lady, and some of the press said, well, if you're a lunch lady, you're certainly the Renegade Lunch Lady, and it stuck.
Okay.
All these years later, it was a quip, and it's stayed with me.
Love it. Okay, so I'm a parent, and I want to do something really right to start my kids off for the day with something good. I don't even want to tell you what I fed my kids for breakfast. It gives me nightmares, but they're all good eaters now, so I'm happy about that. So tell me what you say to a mom or dad. Here is the best thing for on-the-go, two-parent working families, or anybody, to get your kids off to school. What would you tell them to have for breakfast?
Well, certainly whole grains, and, you know, depending on the time of year, I think, you know, in the cooler months, absolutely steel-cut or steel-cut oats or some kind of unprocessed hot cereal.
Okay.
I think that the benefit of whole grains is irrefutable, and it will really help kids get through the day. So I think whole grains, whether it's in a hot cereal or whether it's in a breakfast cereal or granola, anything like that is really good, you know. And we should be certainly feeding our kids fresh fruits and vegetables, and some protein is good as well.
And not really, I mean, when you talked about, you know, corn syrup, it's just about in everything you eat unless you go to the farmer's market. It's so sad to me. I mean, you name it, it shocks me. And gluten, another one that's become public enemy number one. It's on gum. I mean, they brush gum with gluten. I didn't know that till I became Mrs. Green either. Okay, now what about another practical question? When you're picking foods for salad bars for kids, because I think kids, like my grandkids and my kids, like salad bars. How do you decide what's going to be on a salad bar and set up the infrastructure so that is it locally sourced? Is it regionally sourced? I mean, these are some challenges that are realistic to face that restaurant owners that I know who want to buy more organically grown, regionally grown, they have to have the supply. And it's spotty at times. So how do you decide what the kids are, what's going to be on a salad bar, and how does that get set up?
Well, we really, you know, we're in Boulder with a short growing season.
Right.
But in all the school districts we work with, we think that salad bars, we have a salad bar grid, which is sort of like the salad bar menu of what's going to be on it. We change it three or four times within the school year. So right now, we're going to be having tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers, and there's all kinds of broccoli, fresh produce on
right now.
Because, of course, it's, you know, it's the kind of getting to the end of summer. But when we get to winter, it might be roasted potatoes and beets, other root vegetables. You know, we almost always can get local peppers. We'll probably switch to celery and carrots. So we try and be, you know, as healthy and as seasonal as possible, and we try and source regionally, but as I mentioned earlier, we see it as concentric circles that grow and contract. And finally, we use the Pesticide Action Network or the Environmental Working Groups, either their pesticide list, that, you know, the Dirty Dozen.
And the Clean 15. I know, I carry it in my purse.
So we really look at that. So, you know, we're in schools. We have almost no money. So it's certainly not that everything's organic, but, you know, we certainly try and serve our kids food without chemicals as much as we can.
And what about, like, there are so many really unbelievably great things going on here in Tucson, especially at the U of A. There's a lot of hydroponic growing, and there's a Tucson Village Farm School, and there's, you know, this organic food market, Sleeping Frog Foods. We have a food conspiracy, a food co-op. So there are lots of really great opportunities. Our farmers markets are packed, even in the hottest days of summer. And it's very encouraging to me to see that. Now, when you go back to schools, you leave it to the individual schools to, you can't micromanage how they're sourcing their food. So there is the website, the guideline for how a school can get as close to it. Because to me, it's not an absolute. It's a direction that we're all heading. That's a wonderful direction to go in.
Yeah, we certainly don't try and micromanage schools at all. We just try and provide as much information and educational tools as possible. And again, schools have a dollar, $1 or less, 100 pennies or less, to put a healthy plate of food out for lunch. And so it's very, very difficult to make sure that it's, you know, hormone and antibiotic free and it's chemical free and no high fructose corn syrup and trans fats. I mean, you just have to pick your battles. You have to move towards whole foods as much as possible. We want to be feeding kids fresh foods, fresh vegetables, whole grains, and healthy protein as much as possible. And, you know, we all do the best we can.
I know. And I will tell you, we had hot cereal for breakfast every day all winter long as kids. My father would make it before he went off to work in New York City. So some of those old habits of going back to what we had as kids, and it was unconscionable. I mean, my mother just followed the farmers, and we ate very few canned vegetables, and just getting back to that whole concept of not everything being so disposable. I mean, I think about Lunchables, which I don't think there is a normal, I don't think there's any bit of real food in a Lunchable, and yet when I was a working mom with little kids, I'd go pick up some Lunchables and didn't know any better. And now I think we know better, and to know better is to do better. I don't think my kids will ever serve their kids Lunchables, which is really a good thing.
Yay.
So what's your big shout-out? We are almost out of time, and it kind of blows me away. What would you like people to take away from the show? What of your books, of the four that you've written, would you recommend? And I have the names of all of them here. How do people begin to educate themselves in a way that they'll want to be passionate and change the way that we feed our children? It's so important what you're doing, and I don't want to sound melodramatic. I don't think we can over-dramatize the situation.
Well, I think what I'd like to leave people with is the understanding that we absolutely must stop feeding our kids highly processed foods. We need to feed our kids a diet of fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains, and healthy protein. Everybody needs to find their kitchens again. We need to cook with our kids. We need to shop with our kids. We need to garden with our kids. We need to turn off the TV and eat with our kids. And if we really make food part of the centerpiece of our lives, then it will become part of the centerpiece of our children's lives. And then they really will work towards and probably be successful at making sure we have a sustainable food supply. We're going to save their lives, their kids' lives, and maybe the planet as well.
I hope so, and I think we have to hurry. That's how I felt after coming back from Argentina. It's like, really, people, we've got to hurry. And there's a lot of really nasty stuff going on out there, and people have to wake up. It's not just about the garbage that we're producing. It's about the garbage we're eating. It's really scary. I mean, I've said this before on air, I used to have an Egg McMuffin a day, and I haven't had one, I think, maybe in about a year. Every once in a while when you're driving late to that appointment and you're starving. But, you know, I my husband called me the other day and asked me, can I get you anything? And I almost said it, and I thought, I can't put that in my body. And I don't want to start picking on any of the fast food restaurants, but I hope they're getting the word and the message and shifting in some ways to at least a little bit healthier food supply. We just avoid fast food restaurants. That's our family plan.
Great. That's perfect.
I know. It is a great way to start. And it's so easy and convenient to just go to the drive-thru on the way home. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about, like, what's the favorite restaurant you ever worked in? I would love to hear that. I know, because there's a big history here for you. I mean, you have quite the exciting life to be ending up where you are, which is, to me, saving the planet through kids' health. But you've got some, you know, you're featured in the New Yorker and the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN, you know, just to drop a few. Nightline, which was one of my favorite shows forever. And now you are the Renegade Lunch Lady, which I hope you see as your crowning glory.
As a matter of fact, I do. I think the favorite thing I did was I spent 2 years as a chef on cruise ships going around the world, and it was right after I graduated from culinary school. So it was a great time to be young and see the world and learn food from people who were creating it. It was really, really exciting.
Okay, and the cruise ships, that's a whole other interesting conversation about I wonder what they're doing. And the beef industry. And the very hopeful thing to me you mentioned is about we've got a lot of great movies, a lot of great awareness. People are waking up, and I want to always be filled with hope, possibility, and change. And believe me, when I read about people like you and what you're doing, you are one of those people. So my absolute kudos to you and to Food Family Farming Foundation and to the lunchbox.org and to the Salad Bars to Schools Project. I hope lots of people are listening. I hope they'll listen to the recording. And Anne, thank you so much for being our guest, but more importantly, what you're doing to save our lives.
Thank you.
This is Green's World Radio Network. Tune in again next week, 12 o'clock. Thanks for being a part of our world, and have a great green week.